Shall we begin?
Why not? Welcome to Frankie Sense and More. It's like she's got a whole lot of goodness for you with a little bit of sass.
Frankie, did you just say...
She sure did. Not to mention, along with...
Whoops.
Join us now as Frankie Picasso and her new co-host mix it up with authors, musicians, and interviews with world-changing people.
Let's begin.
Okay, let's begin now, because it only makes sense.
Hello there, and yes, we are back. This is Frankie Picasso, your host of Frankie Sense and More, and Brent Marchand, our movie critic from Chicago, is here with me today. We are going to be speaking about movies for the month of June. Welcome, Brent.
Hey, everyone. Good to see you. Thanks, Frankie. Well, the summer movie season has been kind of disappointing so far, but thankfully, at least there's a number of good options available for streaming. So those are the ones we're primarily going to be looking at today. First one is a movie that is playing theatrically. It's also streaming. And it's probably the best movie of the summer, if not the year so far. And that's the brand new comedy, You Hurt My Feelings, from director Nicole Holofcener. This is a wonderful little film about honesty. And it takes a look at it from a variety of angles. The primary storyline in this is Julia Louis-Dreyfus plays an author who's written a number of books. She's been successful, maybe not as successful as she'd like to be, but, you know, she's still well enough known. And she's married to her husband, who's always been very supportive of her. But at one point, she accidentally overhears him saying that he doesn't like the new book she's working on. And it hurts her feelings tremendously, given the fact that he's always been in her corner. And now he's saying, well, I just don't feel it. It doesn't sound right. To make matters worse, he's unaware that she heard what he said. So, of course, he starts getting the cold shoulder at home. He doesn't understand why. It takes time for them to figure it out. And then they have to work through the idea of when is too much honesty enough? You know, when's it too much? And both of them have realized that they have issues with honesty that they have to work out. And that's really what the movie explores from a variety of other angles and other story threads as well. And it really is very insightful in terms of exploring this idea that most of us just take for granted that, you know, honesty is always the best policy. Well, we ask, is it?
And, yeah.
You know, it gives you some examples of where it really might not be. So they have to sort things out. And they do it in some very, very funny ways. I mean, this
director,
this director is known for doing movies that are mixtures of comedy and drama, but this is by far her funniest film. And I really like the fact that her work keeps getting better with every picture she does.
Nice.
In particular, in this case, because Julia Louis-Dreyfus is just fabulous in this movie. I mean, she's really spot on.
I'm a big fan of hers anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
you're wrong in my book. But it's interesting because, like, this happens every day in my everyday life. You know, when especially working with young people, you want to be honest, but you don't want to deflate them. You don't want to, like, you know, just flatten them like a pancake and go, "That was awful." It was really good, but, you know, we could enhance this or try that, or, you know, in such ways that you're saying it's not good, but come on, we can do better.
Well, the other thing in this movie too is the couple has a son who's an aspiring screenwriter, and things aren't going as well as he would like with it, but they keep pumping him up. So then the question becomes, is overinflating their enthusiasm a good thing as well? You're not really being honest then either.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of interesting little nuances involved in this issue that get explored in the film. And it makes it for a, you know, really thoughtful kind of watch, but one that's also, like, incredibly entertaining. The other thing I like about this particular director is she has a great way of figuring out how to take the unusual and make it believable. And in this case, not only does she make it believable, but she makes it funny.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can imagine making a scene with an armed holdup funny.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're really doing something right. And she's got a great thing going with the script here, with the performances, with the storyline, everything. It's just really very, very well done. So this is a movie I recommend very highly. I'm going to give it 4.5 stars. It's in theaters. And I understand it's also become, just this week, became available for limited streaming as well.
Yeah, you can get it on Apple. It's here, it's $19 for to rent it. So you can definitely do that if you want to stream it. Tobias, now I think the last movie I saw him in, he was like in a movie where he got high with his friend's son or something, and the kid up in the hospital. Remember that movie? It was a really funny movie. But yeah, he's crazy. He does some funny stuff too.
He's actually, he plays a psychiatrist in this film, and he's got a collection of really kooky patients who, you know, he's trying to be helpful with them, but they don't think he's doing any good for them. And they have these little asides that they throw in at the end of their appointments that always really leaves him, you know, dejected. It's like, hey, I'm trying to help you here.
Yeah. Yeah. Most people don't recognize when they're being.
So so this one's really good. This is one of the summer season films that really is worth your time. So go see it.
All right. Here, let me share my screen. We'll get to the next one.
Okay. So the next one that's also worth your time, this is a new documentary that's appearing on HBO and this Max streaming service right now, Being Mary Tyler Moore, which is a really wonderful, reverent, loving tribute to the actress. But it's not, you know, all sugar-coated either. It shows the many trials and tribulations that she went through primarily off the screen. And that's interesting because I think a lot of people thought of Mary as being just like the character she played on television, on the Dick Van Dyke Show and on the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah, she's so sweet, she's so happy.
Yeah, I mean, perpetually perky and always, you know, upbeat and so forth. But off camera, she had quite a few challenges. I mean, she wrestled with type 1 diabetes.
Yeah.
She had a miscarriage. She lost her only son in a gunshot accident.
Awful.
She lost her two younger siblings. She had a bout with
marriages, right? Two.
She had two divorces. The third one lasted, but you know, still she had to go through two divorces. She had some on again, off again issues with her parents. She ended up in the Betty Ford Clinic at one point. And most people don't know about that because she was a very private person, really didn't talk about it too much because she didn't want to interfere with her work and she didn't want to, you know, ruin her reputation and her chance at getting jobs. But she had to struggle with all that while she was trying to maintain this facade of being, you know, perpetually happy. And when people found out about what happened with her, they were like, we never knew. And how could something like that happen to Mary? I mean, that, you know.
Yeah, our little Mary. And you know, when she did Ordinary People or, you know, other roles where she's not like the perky character, people aren't very, they didn't like that. They wanted Mary back.
No, exactly. And the thing that this movie does is it gives you a very balanced presentation about her entire life and work story. And it gives it in a way that's honest and candid, but without being tawdry or, you know, tabloid-esque or things like that. You know, it shows her as a real person. And it showed how after she ended her second TV series, she almost sort of voluntarily said, I'm going to change paths here. She got divorced. She moved to New York. And she ended up taking parts that she typically wasn't doing before, like her role in Ordinary People and her stage role in Whose Life Is It Anyway? And all of a sudden, people began to see her in a whole new light, like, wow, she's got a range that we never knew that she had.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that this film really brings out is the fact that she, in many ways, was really a very underappreciated talent in Hollywood because she could do the whole range. And this movie shows that, especially when you put, you know, flips side by side with, you know, stuff from the TV shows and then stuff from her movies and stuff from her play. And you begin to realize that, wow, she really was a lot more versatile than any of us thought. And it really, I think, helps to bolster the reasoning behind why in 2012, she won the Screen Actors Guild Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah.
Which was very deserved because she really did do it all.
And, yeah.
You know.
It's funny, Brent, how people, you know, they take an actor and they peg them as that role. And they're always that. They're always that. There's so many actors that, you know, we peg like that. And even, oh my God, I mean, I can't even think of one's not even coming, but there's so many. And it's like, oh, look, that's, you know, Magnum, or that's this, or that's that. And it's like, no, that's Tom Selleck. You know, that's an actor. And he played a role. And was he Quincy Down Under, or is he Magnum? You know, is he this, or is he that? And people just, I don't know. It's like they're so good and so believable that we think that that's who they are, and they forget this is an actor. This is like their job. They go do, and they get makeup on, and you know, and away they go.
Well, when she did the Dick Van Dyke Show, she and Dick Van Dyke had such a great chemistry on screen that people actually believed the two of them were married in real life as well. And the two of them actually had to say publicly, "We're not married."
That's so funny.
And it still didn't seem to sink in with a lot of people. And then when she did the Mary Tyler Moore Show, everybody thought, "Oh, well, she's the single career woman who's out making it for herself." Well, she was a married mother and wife. I mean, you know, this was actually her actually having to really play a role, because that's not who she was off screen. But this is a good film. It's very reverential. It's very kind of formulaic as documentaries go, but it's still very well done. Has a lot of people in it who worked with her, that are interviewed in current and archive interviews. There's quite a few segments showing interviews with celebrities and journalists from the time. There's a lot of clips from TV shows and the movies, but there's also, you know, stuff from her private side as well. You know, scenes, for example, from her bachelorette party before she got married for the third time. So you get to see Mary again in a very different light there as well. So this is really a very thoughtful, loving film. And if you're a fan of Mary Tyler Moore, I think you'll really enjoy it. And if you're new to her material, you know, younger audiences who may not be aware of her, check it out, because you can see just how good she is in so many ways. One of the things in particular I liked about this film is they included a clip from the Mary Tyler Moore Show from an episode called Chuckles Bites the Dust, where she plays a very self-righteous character with her coworkers, who were joking about the death of the host of a clown from a local children's show. And it has the clip from the very end at the clown's memorial service, where suddenly she's having to, you know, walk or talk and has a really hard time doing it. It's a scene that was voted the funniest and best sitcom episode of all time by TV.
Wow.
Yeah, and just watching that particular scene, you can see her giving a masterclass in how to be a comedian. I mean, she is so good at it, and it comes across so naturally, and you can't help but laugh your behind off watching that scene. It's just so, so well done.
Nice.
So I give this one 4 stars. As I say, it's on the HBO cable channel and the Max streaming service right now.
Okay. Let's move on to Elfu. Can you see? Is that showing?
No, not yet.
Not showing. Okay, one moment. Okay, here we go.
Okay, so in honor of what's left of Pride Month, we have a movie from that's a co-production from the Netherlands and Morocco called Elfu, which translates as The Love. It's the story of a Moroccan immigrant man who lives in Amsterdam now, and he is in the closet about his sexuality. And he, because he doesn't want to disrespect his family, he doesn't want to hurt his reputation, but it's gotten to the point where it's gotten to be more and more difficult for him to hide. And at one point, he is accidentally found to be with his partner by his dad, and it creates a firestorm in the family. So he goes to the family house, tries to explain his situation. The family doesn't want to hear it. And he ends up resorting to a tactic that he resorted to as a kid, where he ended up going and locking himself in the downstairs utility closet. Now there's certainly a certain irony in terms of the choice of his location. Some might say it's a little bit on the corny side, but personally, I think it's very appropriate and very in the circumstances.
This was one of the best movies I have seen in a long time. As far, I'm not even going to say as far as you know, homosexuality or anything like that, but it was just so well done with all the imagery and very unique, very creative in how it told its story. Anybody could watch this movie and really feel something, I think, and not be, if you're a little homophobic, you could still watch this movie. It's not going to bother you or anything like that. It tells a really good story, and it explains the angst and of coming out, you know, coming out and where a guy was just fed up, I guess, can't do it.
Yeah, and it approaches it from a number of different ways, too, in the fact that while he's in the closet, they show a number of flashbacks to his earlier life.
Yeah.
Particularly trying to counsel his gay cousin, who was also just, you know, struggling with coming out. And for the longest time, he played along with what the expected culture was and saying, don't say anything, don't say anything. But by doing that, he was making things worse for his cousin. It also shows flashbacks to when he was a kid and he was talking to his younger self in terms of how to deal with this. And, you know, as a kid, he seemed to be a lot more open to the idea, but now as an adult, where he felt he had a lot more to lose in terms of his family and in terms of his material life, he just was staying closeted for the longest time.
Yeah.
That, of course, changes when he meets his partners. There's flashbacks to when he first meets his partner, who was an immigrant from Africa. And he basically said, you know, if people can't accept me for who I am, they have no business being in my life. And he was trying to convince his new boyfriend now to be the same way. And he just couldn't bring himself to do it. Well, when this situation is unfolding in the house, all of these issues get brought to a head. Mm-hmm. And then you also find out that from the family side, in terms of the stuff they were saying, like, just go along with it. Just do your part. If you want to get married, go get married and then do your other stuff on the side and don't tell anybody. I mean, what good is served by that sort of thing? I mean, that's just
like you're hurting more people.
Oh, yeah.
The wife was supposed to be okay with that. And
yeah.
Supposed to be okay with that. And
You know, and his mother basically says, well, you know, there were choices that I made that I had to go through that, you know, I didn't particularly like, and you should be willing to do the same because, you know, if you don't, like, what will people think?
Yeah.
Well, you know, to hell with what the people think. I mean, in this day and age, you know, if you can't be yourself, why bother? I mean, it's so ridiculous that people are so concerned with keeping up these facades, these pretenses.
Yeah.
Things are not what they are just because you're worried about how it's going to look to other people. I mean, that's crazy.
I think the very last scene, I'm not going to tell people what it is, but the very last scene just kind of says it all.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Summed it up perfectly.
It really does.
Yeah.
So this is, I saw this movie a long time ago, actually. I saw it last fall at a film festival, and I was afraid it was only going to be playing the film festival. But then about a month or two ago, it became available for streaming online, which I was very happy to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a film that I think a lot of people will not only enjoy, but particularly for a lot of people who've gone through the coming out process, really be able to relate to what's going on in this picture. It's very well acted. It's beautifully filmed.
Yep. Excuse me. Yeah, it's in English and Dutch. Is it Dutch or maybe it's
kind of a combination of Dutch and Arabic.
Arabic, yeah.
Yeah.
So three languages there, but you can get through it.
Yeah, it's also interesting in the fact that it features the flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And also features some surrealistic sequences in it, which are another interesting little touch. The production design is very well put together, given the fact that it's taking place in such a really limited space, you know.
Yeah. And it's he's very wealthy. He's got a beautiful car.
Yeah,
you know, he's got a beautiful apartment. Like where his parents live is very modest, but you know, but he goes, "I gave you this and I gave you that," and here, Elvis.
Yeah, that's the real irony, is the fact that he's been so generous to them. Mm-hmm. And yet they still want him to be like their little boy in so many ways. Yeah. Kind of like, excuse me, but you know, what's all this that you're enjoying that came out of my pocket?
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. So
especially his brother too, because like, you know, his brother is really homophobic. And he goes, I beat up people for you. I stood up for you. Like I looked after you. And this is how you treat me. You know, you can't see beyond. And that's the thing. It's like people can't see beyond the sexuality. They cannot see beyond, you know, that one facet, that one little thing that makes us human. One thing that you actually, you know, don't even need to go out there and tell people about, you know, like, or invite them into your bedroom, for God's sakes. You know, it's like, it's crazy.
Well, you know, there's one thing I can't remember exactly where I saw this. It was on a documentary of some kind, where a person was being interviewed saying, well, when it comes to the sexuality aspect, don't you have trouble getting past that? And the person said, I don't think about that. I mean, do you think about a heterosexual couple in that context?
Yeah.
I wonder what, you know, John and Mary do together in the bedroom, you know? Yeah. No, of course not. Nobody thinks in those terms.
Yeah.
But why should you worry about what, you know, John and Don are doing in there? I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So
exactly. And it's almost like brings you back to Mary, you know, to the Mary, because it's like you're looking at one facet of who she was. You didn't look at the whole person. You looked at one little, she was an actor. That was it. That's all you know. You're not looking at the mother, the wife, the sister, mother, whatever, you know, a daughter. We are multifaceted in more than one thing.
Yep, absolutely. So this one, as I say, is available for streaming on a number of different platforms right now. I give it 4.5 stars.
Yeah, I would too.
And, you know, if you don't get a chance to see it during what's left of Pride Month, well, it'll be around for a while. So,
yeah.
So go see it.
All right. Let me share this.
Okay. And our next new film is a documentary about film preservation called Film, The Living Record of Our Memory. And this is a tremendous film in terms of looking at the subject that has often been kind of overlooked. Mm-hmm. And the film makes a very, you know, pointed case for the reason behind why we need to preserve film, particularly given the fact that they say early on in the picture that 75% of the silent films ever made have been lost.
Wow.
And roughly 50% of the films that have been made since the era of the talkies began have been lost. And, you know, we're talking about a really precious resource here artistically in terms of not just giving you wonderful stories, but also in terms of documenting the way the world has gone on.
Yeah.
It's significant in the fact that film is the one art form that is almost always collectively produced. It's not the effort of just one person. So there's really a lot of effort that goes into creating it. And it shows how really people have been very thoughtless and careless about a lot of the stuff. I mean, some of it has just been neglect from the films allowed to go bad. Some of it has been from intentional destruction under places like the regimes in Nazi Germany and Soviet Russia. And in many cases, some of the stuff is, you know, documentary of the events of the time.
Yeah.
Where we actually had a record of it and now it's gone forever.
Yeah.
So this film explores the many options that are being made now to help preserve film and keep it from being lost. And it's astounding when you go in to see some of the warehouses where the films have been stored and you just see stacks and stacks and stacks of reels of film that have just been sitting there allowing to be neglected, falling apart.
Wow.
Some cases they can do something with it, some cases they can't. But they're working feverishly now to develop new techniques to save it. And the other thing that they make a point of is that this is not something that's limited just to studios and news organizations and places like that. It even affects things like home movies. You know, you might not necessarily think that they would be terribly important to a wide audience, but they're certainly precious to the people who film them for themselves.
Yeah.
So they're making lots of recommendations there for people to make sure that they take steps to preserve their own materials that they consider vital before they go, because it doesn't take long. I mean, the film shows, particularly if you're in an environment where the conditions are humid or hot, stuff turns to mush very quickly.
And plus, some of the people were taking the silver back out of it, so because they needed money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, the early silent films were filmed on a silver laden film that they found after the movie showed. The silver in the film was worth more than the movie itself. So they were, you know, broken down, and silver was extracted. And again, the movie was lost forever. So this is a wake-up call, I think, to a lot of us. The other thing that's interesting, too, is the fact that a lot of people fail to understand that they think that once you put it on digital, it's there forever. And they make a point that there's no guarantee that that's going to happen either. So they're recommending the continual evolution of finding new ways to keep these things. And that's one of the things I like about the title of this film, The Living Record of Our Memory, because that's really what it is.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. And you know what's interesting? I was thinking about the other day that, you know, as a grandmother of 13, I look back and I could probably find maybe 5 baby pictures of myself. These kids today have hundreds every day. Every day they're sending me pictures and pictures and pictures. It's like, this has to be the most recorded generation in history of mankind with a cell phone. You know, absolutely. It's absolutely crazy. Like, I don't even know how they'll cull any of those, but if they do decide to, they will see minute by minute them growing up. It's crazy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And where we thought, you know, is it good enough to, you know, to take over to the drugstore and get them to do? I don't know. Yeah.
This movie is very much a wake up call in a lot of ways. And I think a lot of people who maybe haven't previously given this much thought will come away from it saying, wow, that really is important. That really, you know, should be done.
Well, as a historian, as an archaeologist, as a, you know, anything, anthropologist, you look at this in years ahead and look back and go, that's how they lived. That's what they wore. That's what they, you know, yeah, you don't even have to dig it up out of the earth. It's all right there for you to see.
Exactly. Exactly. And one person in particular who really deserves a lot of credit behind this is Martin Scorsese.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's the one who really got the ball rolling in a big way in terms of getting people on board with it. And he ended up bringing over a number of other famous directors to get behind it, like Steven Spielberg and George Lucas, Sidney Pollack. I mean, they all got together and said, yeah, we've got to do this, because this is our history. This is our art. And future generations really need to see this. So is another one that's available for streaming online. And this is another one that's going to get 4.5 stars. It's a really good film in so many ways.
Now, this next one, I was really looking forward to it. Tell me.
Yeah, this is one of two movies that I would strongly recommend staying away from. I was looking forward to this one a lot as well. It's called Past Lives. It tells a story of two young Korean children who were best friends. They were separated and didn't reunite until many years later. And it was an opportunity for them to kind of reflect upon what they had, what might have been, and so on and so forth. But as you see this picture in the poster, you pretty much see what much of the movie is like. They end up standing there staring at each other and not more. I mean, I would have thought that this would be the kind of film that would bring out an opportunity for some interesting discussions and some, you know, interesting, lively conversation.
Yeah, especially with the title.
Yeah, and it's boring. I mean, they just stand there and sort of look at each other and say, wow, whoa,
oh,
imagine this. Come on, like, open your mouths and say something already.
Yeah.
And it's a shame, because the movie is beautifully filmed. It's got a nice soundtrack to it. It's well acted, but they just don't have the script to go with it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I realize it's kind of a paper thin narrative to begin with. The storyline is not terribly involved, but do something when you check them together, and they really don't.
You know what? I think I've told you this before. Like, I watch Korean TV every day. I love Korean TV. Like, they have some of the best imagination and the best, you know, things going. And for this to be such a dud, it's like,
yeah, what,
man.
You know, and the other thing is, you know, with a title like Past Lives, I really sort of was thinking there was going to be more of an angle with related.
Yeah, and they love that kind of stuff. They're very into past lives and into metaphysical, you know, topics. A lot of their soaps and stuff are based on that. So I thought for sure it would too.
Yeah, it's treated more like an afterthought than anything else. And one of the things I find interesting is one of the scenes where they talk about it, the woman who you saw on the poster there, she's talking to her future husband, not the man you saw there. Mm-hmm. And she brings up the idea of the Korean idea of reincarnation. And he says to her, do you believe in that sort of thing? And she says, no, that's usually just the sort of thing that Koreans say to each other to like want to seduce them. And that's kind of like where it gets left. I mean, okay, so I mean, is that saying that
one reference
there's really not as much to this as we think there is? And if that's the case, then why did you even bother to bring it up in the first place? And why did you use it to make a reference in your own title of the film?
Yeah.
It's,
okay.
So this one gets 2 stars. You know, it's... I think the director who made this, it's her debut feature, Celine Song. I think she's got a future because, you know, stylistically, there are a lot of things about this film that look nice, but she's got to have a better script and better material to work with. This just was too flat for its own good.
All right. Here, let me share this last one. Now, this one is a case in study of, I can't even tell you how many movies that you see with this kind of cast that are the biggest flops out there.
How? Yeah. This was one of the most anticipated films of the summer. And it's turning out to be a film that people either love or hate. I'm on the other end of it. I haven't been as bored at a movie in my entire life as I was while watching this one. It's kind of an incomprehensible story of life in a small town in the desert where there's been evidence of aliens and asteroids and it ties into a stage production. I had trouble even following this thing. It's so convoluted. It just strikes me as a stream of consciousness film. It's just really was a big disappointment to me. The director, Wes Anderson, is known for making movies that are incredibly stylish. He made movies like the Grand Budapest Hotel and, you know, the French Dispatch. So, I mean, that really is his strong suit, but I mean, there's really nothing of any real substance here. I've heard a lot of viewers and critics making arguments saying things like, oh, it's a meditation on creativity. I'm like, in what way? I just looked at it and said, okay, you're being creative in terms of throwing all of these interesting little bits out there, but none of them seem to relate to one another in any comprehensible way.
Yeah.
So I just don't understand it. I don't really see why people are raving about it. When I see the people who have absolutely hated it, I can absolutely agree with them completely. Because to me, this was a big waste of time.
There's another movie, had all these kinds of people, Dennis Quaid and Halle Berry and a whole bunch of people. Cannot remember the name of it. We go to the theater and before it starts, one of the theater attendants comes to the front of the room and they say, excuse me, but a lot of people have been walking out of this movie. So you can watch the first 20 minutes and if you don't like it, you can come out and get your money back. Have you ever gone to a movie where they say that before? Never.
And well, one of the things I found interesting with this is, I mean, it's being billed as a comedy. And when I saw it in the theater,
it wasn't funny.
Nobody was laughing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I laughed once during the entire film. I mean, it's just not funny.
So, and I said to my husband, I said, you know, we like movies. Like, we really like movies. So maybe these people are just not getting it. Maybe they just, you know, it's passing over their heads or something. We were one of those people that had to leave after 20 years to get their money back.
Yeah, I'm surprised that I'm surprised that didn't happen at the screening that I attended for this film, because I mean, I was bored to tears about 20 minutes into it. Wow. And kept checking my watch after that.
Yeah.
My partner fell asleep.
Oh my God.
You know, I mean, it was just, I just couldn't see what people were seeing in this.
How long is it?
It's about an hour and 45 minutes, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
One of the longest
hours. There's some time you can't get back.
longest hour and 45 minutes, I think I spent a long time, you know, but
yeah.
So, I will admit it's beautifully filmed.
Wait until it's free on TV and then
maybe
give it a chance.
You know, it's very stylish in terms of its production design. All of Wes Anderson's films are like that, so that's no surprise. But I'm still only going to give this one star, and I'm being generous in doing that.
All right. There you go. There's June.
Yeah. We have one more.
I got one more. Okay.
We got one more.
Okay.
Now, to help redeem for those two, there's another film that I'd recommend. That's
Mama Bear.
Okay. This one is another one that's for what's remaining of coming out month. And that's the documentary Mama Bears. This was a film that we talked on here about a year ago.
Yeah.
Which is a documentary about a group of fundamentalist Christian mothers who have defied what their church has told them to do and have willingly decided to agree to support their gay children. And it presents several case studies of how each of the parents approached this particular subject when the time came. And these mothers eventually got together and formed a support group, national support group called the Mama Bears. And they are, fully fundamentalist Christians in every other respect, except this one, because they said, they're our kids. We don't care what you say about them. They're our kids. We love them. We support them. Even if they're not necessarily living the life that we think is right for them, we're still going to support them for being our kids. And I really have to absolutely, positively salute these mothers for their courage, for standing up for their kids, for standing up against their preachers who are trying to tell them what to do.
Yeah.
And this is a great showcase for illustrating what they're doing in terms of how they're supporting their kids, in terms of what the organization is doing. Now, the reason why I brought this back up is the fact that this film was recently included as part of the PBS collection on the TV series Independent Lens.
Okay.
And it aired on PBS last week. And it's available for streaming on the PBS Independent Lens website. I'm not sure for how long, but if you get the chance to see it, I recommend it. It's definitely worth the watch to see the courageous efforts of these mothers standing up for their kids under circumstances where they might otherwise be, you know, put down.
That reminded me of El Hoop, and when the father, you know, and the father looked at his son and he said, like, what is it? And he goes, I was worried I won't see you in the afterlife. Like, yeah. That's what it wasn't that he was gay per se. Yeah. It's that religion said he's not going to be there in the afterlife with the rest of the family. And that's what concerned him.
Exactly. Well, you know, going back to El Hoop, one of the things in that movie is the fact that a lot of times when you look at what the parents are really saying, it's not always so much about the gay issue, it's as much about how this is going to reflect on them.
Right.
You know, I mean, did we do something wrong? You know, are we sanctioning this kind of behavior? Why are they doing something that nobody else does?
Yeah.
How do they feel that they can get away with doing something that we didn't have a choice in the matter? Well, the thing is, you had a choice in the matter too. And you're just, I think, maybe a little bit envious of the fact that they're willing to stand up and say that they do.
Yeah.
And that's what Mama Bears does too, in so many ways. I mean, it shows that these kids are going to be themselves regardless of what they're being told. And parents are thankfully willing to stand up and support them.
Yeah.
So this is a very uplifting, inspiring documentary. And I would give this one 4 stars also. Like I say, I don't know how long it's going to be available on Independent Lens or on PBS, but catch it while you can if you're interested in seeing it, because it's definitely worth the time.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Brent. Appreciate that.
Oh, my pleasure.
There you go. got some movies to watch for June, and there'll be some more stuff. We didn't do Raiders or anything like that, which
Paris. No, that's opening tomorrow.
Okay, so look forward to that in July.
I'll be seeing it over the weekend. And actually, one of the ones I think I'm going to try to talk about next month also, it just premiered last night, another HBO documentary called Rock Hudson, All That Heaven Allowed. Yeah, and that's another really interesting film about showing how he ended up, you know, being in the closet all those years of his life, but ended up being an unwitting activist in the fight against AIDS because he was the first celebrity to come forward to admit that he had it.
Yeah.
So we'll talk more about that next month. But in the meantime, if you want to catch it, that's on HBO and the Max streaming service right now as well.
Cool. Thank you. All right, Facebook, we will see you later.
Take care. Bye-bye.